did cheer me up, actually. The prospect of being able to Roneo myself a new body is an excellent concept, and I, at the very least, should get you a very generous science fiction contract, you know, beyond anything else that it might achieve. I have to print myself a new brain to understand some of it, but I expected that at this conference, so that's very good for me. You'll notice I'm staying in my seat here. We've decided on a sort of counterintuitive seating and addressing arrangement. Barry's over here. Who knows where everyone else will be? I'm going to remain here to announce our next guest, who is Richard Howes. Richard Howes is the chief... Sorry?
I'm last.
You're last. Okay. Who wants to go next? You? Okay. That is totally cool, because this is all about just blue sky thinking. So if you want to go next, that's excellent. Well, Lawrence Sui, he joined Swiss Re in 1997 and since then has worked for the company in Australia, Switzerland, Singapore and Hong Kong. He's currently Global Product Actuary for Risk Products, responsible for costing and development of life and health risk products concerning mortality, disability, critical illness, medical and other cheering influencing factors across the globe. During his career, Lawrence has been heavily involved in the pricing, product design and risk management of life and health business with a particular focus on Asian markets. He's the author and co-author of various papers, has presented at numerous industry conferences in Asia and Australia on topics related to cancer, critical illness, healthcare and longevity. I'm not sure from where he's going to address us today. Surprise us. Lecton, go for it. Lawrence.
Okay. I'm going to be a bit more traditional and address you from the lectern. I also have some slides. So Barry talked about throwing a bit of information, but you don't have to just believe the information that Barry's going to have to throw at you. I'm going to provide a little bit more substance, I suppose. In terms of things that are actually happening. So what I'm going to talk about today is some of the factors, some of the advances that will cause people to live longer in the future. But first, I'm going to take a quick look into the past. So these, you can't really see any of the numbers there, but basically the top lines there are various life expectancy lines that look at, and basically you can see that since about the 1970s, it's pretty relentlessly upward life expectancy. Everything looks pretty positive. At the bottom there, you'll see mortality broken down by different causes. And really the key thing I want you to see from this chart is that you see the big red section, that's basically cardiovascular mortality. And the story of mortality improvement over the last few decades is basically a story of improving cardiovascular mortality. The yellow section there is cancer, and as you can see, not a lot of progress on cancer until you get to the last couple of decades or so. So that's for males. Females looks pretty much the same, actually, so I'm not going to really talk about it. But you'll notice that females, yeah, the life expectancy line is higher, of course, and the mortality lines are lower. Okay, so given that heart disease and cardiovascular mortality is such a big part of what's caused mortality to improve over the past few decades, I thought it might be interesting to look at what actually, if you break it down, what is actually causing cardiovascular mortality to improve. And this is some information taken from a model developed by the people at the University of Liverpool called the IMPACT model. It's based on UK data, but Australia actually shows very similar patterns to the UK, so it's pretty much applicable to Australia as well. And I suppose the key thing I want you to get out of this is that cardiovascular mortality has improved not just because of one thing, it's actually many things. And actually the many things have changed over time. So whereas over the 80s and 90s, the main thing that caused cardiovascular mortality to improve was reduction in smoking prevalence. In the 2000s, it's more to do with blood pressure, and a lot of that is to do with improved drugs to treat hypertension. Okay, so given that these many different factors have caused mortality to improve over the past, what are the many different factors that might cause mortality to improve in the future? And this is where actuaries can't afford to squirrel away in their little corners and extrapolate from the past. We actually need to talk to people. But luckily, other people have done the talking for us. So this is these are some points adapted from a report developed by an organisation called Foresight. It's actually an arm of the UK Government Office of Science, and their brief is to develop some, to look at some sort of forward-looking, to develop a forward-looking idea of some of the technologies that will actually the original purpose of the report is to work out where the UK government should invest or encourage investment to generate jobs and economics. But actually, a lot of the technologies that they've identified, and they've identified 53 technological developments after interviewing and having workshops with 180 experts from a lot of different fields, so they've actually done a lot of our work for us. They've identified a number of technologies here, and some of them, probably what Barry said is perhaps not as far-fetched as some of you might have originally believed, but organ 3D printing is up there, and a number of the other ones. So what I'm going to talk a little bit more about is the two that are highlighted in colour, and this may be an explanation for why Annabelle's survey said that biomedical engineers are the number two profession. Two of the things I'm going to talk about, one is genetics and genomics, and the other thing is stem cells. And these are two things that have the potential to be major game changers in the way that mortality improves in the future. Right, so talking about genetics first, we've come a long way, I suppose, in understanding genetics. And I'm not going to talk about all of these developments, and I'm not going to talk about Angelina Jolie's breasts or anything like that, even though I suppose it's the way that, I suppose, the public accesses information about genetics. But what I'm going to talk about is, I suppose, three developments that are really causing a lot of progress in life expectancy improvements related to a better understanding of genetics. So one is we've greatly improved the speed with which we can map people's genomes as part of the Human Genome Project. And then as part of the information that's flowed from the Human Genome Project, we now have publicly available databases that give you basically all the information that you would need to know about the location of various genes and, I suppose, to date what we know about them. And then the third development that will revolutionise the genetics industry is basically the ability to analyse big data sets. So yesterday, Adam Drucy talked about big data and the implications for marketing and for strategy. One of the other big applications of big data is really to understand the human genome and identify exactly where on the bits of our genetic material are actually the markers that cause us various diseases or cause us our health to deteriorate. So this is a chart of how much DNA sequencing has costed over the past a bit over a decade. The pink line there is Moore's Law, which is basically the doubling of computer power every 2 years or a halving of costs every 2 years. And as you can see, the cost of human genome sequencing is doing rather better than that, and you ought to be doing pretty well to be doing better than Moore's Law, I think. You'll see that in 2008 or so, there was a bit of a step change in the cost of sequencing. It's slowed down a bit since then, but I can tell you that probably at the end of that graph, there's another revolution coming. So there's another type of sequencing called nanopore sequencing, which should reduce the cost of DNA sequencing even further. So it's predicted that sometime this year, the cost of human genome sequencing will drop below the $1,000 mark, and probably by next year, if nanopore technology takes off, it'll probably get down to $300 sometime next year. But I think to put it in raw numbers, I think a good way to understand it is basically to think that when the Human Genome Project ended in 2003, it cost $10 to $50 million to sequence a genome, and it took 3 to 4 months. Today, it costs $3,000 to $5,000, and it takes 1 to 2 days. And by next year, as I said, it may cost $300 and take less than a day. So this has the potential to completely revolutionize the way medicine works and our understanding of the human body and the patterns of disease. So as fast as all the genetic data is being collected, it's also being made publicly available. There are some issues with patent and copywriting of certain genes, which acts as a bit of a barrier to medical advances. But for the most part, a lot of the information that's being collected as part of the Human Genome Project and the subsequent activities is being made publicly available on the internet so that people can, various medical researchers can draw from it as they will. And the big challenge, I guess, is this is where the big data challenge comes in. Today, we have a map of the human genome, but it's a bit like having a Google Earth satellite map, but we only have like one or two cities or countries marked on that map. So the big task for geneticists, people involved in this industry over the next decade or so will be to actually find out what are the various locations of the actual genes that cause disease. So I'm running out of time. I'll talk about this slide and then I'll skip over the next few. You can get your own personal genome now for $99 US plus $79.95 postage if you live in Australia. You can get your own personal genome map. This is not quite the whole thing yet. So this maps 1 million pairs, whereas you actually have 3 billion pairs, but it's sort of a fair representation of what your likelihood is to develop certain diseases. Right. So what does this mean for the industry? Well, we'll understand disease like never before. We'll be able to treat people better than ever before, so that it holds the potential for personalized medicine. At the same time, there are all sorts of nasty side effects that may come with genetic information. And for the insurance industry in particular, the ability of people to understand their own likelihood of developing certain diseases has a lot of implications for us in terms of anti-selection and the way we sell our products. So I'm not going to talk about stem cells because I'm running out of time, but basically stem cells hold the potential key for us to reverse the aging process. Basically, we age because our ability of our cells to replicate breaks down over time. And one of the potentially revolutionary technologies that's going to help us to live longer, help our cells replicate better, as stem cells. In the past, there were some ethical concerns about using embryonic stem cells. A lot of that has gone away now with the Nobel Prize winner from last year, who's developed a way to turn adult stem cells back into what's called pluripotent stem cells that have the ability to become many different types of cells. So basically, what I wanted to give you a flavour of is basically that I think, for me, the main reason why I think that mortality will continue to improve over time is basically because everyone is working towards mortality improving. Everyone thinks that living longer is a good thing, and as a result, all the money that's channeled in the medicine, all government policy is all aimed towards making people live longer. So I guess if the challenge, as Barry put forward, is to be able to communicate some of the issues that are associated with increasing life expectancy to the public, I guess that would be my take on why I think that mortality will continue to improve, why life expectancy will continue to increase. Basically, everything that we do today is working towards getting people to live longer. Now, whether that's a good investment of money is a different question, but I'll leave that to some of the other panelists in the later discussion to take up that issue. So thank you.